Welcome to Access to Answers, Preparing to Unlock, a collaboration between Goodwin and Cambridge Innovation Capital exploring hot topics and practical tips for entrepreneurs and startups in the tech and life sciences industry. In this episode, Roshni Thacker of Goodwin and Carol Chung of CIC will discuss the practical actions a startup can do to prepare for investment.
Hi, Carol.
Hey, Roshni.
How are you doing?
Doing really well, thanks.
Good. It's good to see you. It's really nice to be sat here in the same room for the first time in what seems like forever.
Yeah, it's been a while. And I got to say, as much as I enjoy seeing which Zoom virtual background you have today, I much prefer us chatting in person.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for agreeing to join me for this podcast.
Thanks for having me. This is actually technically my first podcast, so I'm quite excited. And I think we should just get started, if that's okay with you.
Sure.
Cool. Okay, so Roshni, then what type of internal improvements do you think startups should do now with their downtime?
So there are a number of things to be thinking about right now. And really, the broad answer is you need to be thinking about everything that an investor may want to see when completing their diligence exercise. So let's pick up on some of the bigger issues. A company's cap table, for example, is, as you might expect, at the forefront of any preliminary discussion with an investor. And so we need to ensure that this accurately reflects the company's position, particularly in the current environment.
True. I mean, again, the cap table to me, simply, it's a statement of record. And it is just a table with rows and columns that documents all the different share classes that a company has, all the different shareholders, and how each shareholder has a certain number and therefore proportion of shares of the company. So yeah, absolutely need to make sure that's crisp. I'd also recommend that the company should clearly list out their option pool, the number of options that are allocated versus being available.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And is it helpful for companies to think ahead of time and perhaps show you what their post-financing cap table would look like? So obviously this would be hypothetical at this stage, but at least it might give you as an investor a better understanding of the company and the way in which they see themselves progressing.
That is absolutely true, Roshni. I think that it's very important for any founder or startup to really have a clear view on what valuation and what they perceive to be their funding journey going forward. So it's a good exercise to take that cap table and do some scenario analysis when you're raising a round and to think about how raising different levels of money result at different valuations result in different levels of dilution for certainly shareholders and founders and existing investors. So I think the key point here is really for founders to think about how they position themselves for future rounds, where you want to ensure that if you think there will be multiple rounds, what is the cadence in valuation step up? Because you'd want to ensure that later stage investors are enticed to come in later on, and so that they can all generate a meaningful return. I'd also suggest trying to keep your cap table and your structure for a company as clean and simple as possible. So you'd almost really want to avoid complex caps and other sort of funky structures that ultimately compound over time and really just cause headaches in the future.
And turning back to your point on valuation, the cap table will feed into your financial model, which will also need to be tailored for this new environment we're operating in. And that, of course, feeds into a bigger discussion on valuation as a whole, which we can touch on separately.
Yeah, and our listeners can't see it, but I'm actually smiling at you, actually, because valuation is such a big topic that if we were keen, we could do a 30-minute podcast on it. But it is of course, very, very relevant and important. So, Roshni, so a follow-up question from my part is, what other sort of big pitfalls do you foresee for startups?
So one issue that crops up on deals quite frequently, particularly in relation to early stage companies, and one that's very important for investors, relates to IP ownership, particularly given that the value of a lot of these companies lies in its people and the IP that they've developed. So with that, companies and founders need to be thinking about whether all key employees, and in fact other employees and consultants, have entered into agreements with the company. And by virtue of that, has all of the relevant IP been assigned to the company? And is that assignment valid?
Yeah, and Roshni, if I can just sort of dig deeper on that. I mean, when you're talking about these service agreements and IP assignments and such, they're legal documents, and are they having it completely crisp in order? Is that more of a process point, or what is the real driving need for these documents?
So going back to basics, there needs to be a formal agreement in place which governs your relationship as founder director, senior executive, employee with the company.
Mm.
And that agreement will outline the relevant individual's roles and responsibilities in any terms relating to compensation, but will also ensure that any intellectual property that's created by that individual, either during their employment or when providing services to the company, is validly assigned to the company. And that is absolutely vital to protect any investor's future investment as well as the future of the company. Going forward and thinking ahead, it's likely that those service agreements will tie in with any good lever, bad lever provisions that are required by venture capital investors.
Makes sense.
And when we're thinking about any employee of the company departing from the company, we want to ensure that they're bound by post-termination restrictions, so non-solicits and non-competes.
Mm.
All of the value really needs to be in the company. What we don't want is a scenario whereby the IP hasn't fully vested in the company.
Gotcha. So if I sort of reflect on what you've described, Roshni, the way I interpret that at a higher level is you're saying to me that the service agreement on one side and your IP assignments other are really just two documents that protect really the two most important assets of a business, certainly to a VC, which is, again, firstly, your talent and team, which is the service agreements covered, and the underlying technology, which your IP assignments really, really protect as well. So these are very critical documents to protect the business and ascribe value for a VC then.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's also vital for entrepreneurs, companies, founders to understand the agreements they're signing up to before doing so, so that they can ensure that they're complying with any obligations that they might have within those. And that's just as important for investors to understand.
Oh, very true. I mean, picking up on your point there, Roshni, I personally feel that it's really important for certainly investors and definitely entrepreneurs to really understand investor majority consent matters, mm-hmm. which are made up in your legal documents as well. And I find very often not all do. And it's important because founders need to understand which matters even require this level of consent, mm-hmm. and who are the individual parties that are your shareholders and your board members that have to provide this consent. What is the threshold and which permutations and combinations of shareholders have to provide this consent and who has a blocking position. So previously we were talking about cap tables and using them to model out different scenarios. Well, one of the follow-on points is actually looking at these investor majority levels that are agreed in your legal documents to see, well, in a new round after it's closed, who are the new directors that have to give these consents, give these agreement levels. So that is well worth figuring out and understanding, really.
Absolutely, and picking up on your point around consents, and while slightly less interesting, companies need to make sure they've got records of all of these kinds of consents and decisions.
Mm.
And now would be a great time to make sure that all of your relevant corporate authorities and investor majority consents have been sought and been passed. And that includes anything that the company's done from incorporation to an allotment of shares.
Yeah.
Because at the time of either a financing or an exit, this is going to crop up on a diligence exercise.
Yeah.
And any buyer or investor will want to make sure that the company has had the relevant authority when it comes to decision making.
Mm.
We also want companies to be keeping their statutory registers up to date because investors and buyers will want to see that these are accurate. They reflect the position of the company. I've certainly had instances before where I've had to craft lengthy sets of statutory registers in order to get a deal over the line.
Sounds like fun at midnight, doesn't it? That's super helpful. Thanks, Roshni. I guess it's what I'm hearing again is really it's just about being practical, ensuring that the company's house is more.
Correct, and it could be a good idea to run a mock diligence exercise internally using a due diligence questionnaire, and that document is certainly something that the team at Goodwin can send over if you don't have access to one. So moving on kind of more towards the practical operational side of things, could you shed some more light on what needs to be done or what this time could be used to do from a practical operational perspective?
Happy to. I think it's really good time now for companies to look inwardly at your products. Mm-hmm. So these are the goods and services that you provide. And firstly, ask, where do they sit on the value chain? And is there a new value chain? Now we're in the post-COVID world, and where do you sit in that new chain? And also to ask yourself, do you actually have good product market fit now?
And when you talk about product market fit, what does that mean? How would I know if I had good product market fit?
So for me, I think about product and I think, okay, well, do you, firstly, taking a page off of Jeff Bezos' Amazon, do you have a product or service that really delights your customers? So that's the first checkpoint. Second one is that particular product easily repackaged and is it sold easily to multiple customers? So if your answer is yes to one and two, then that's already looking quite good. And I think that one analytic tool you can use to assess product market fit is actually looking at your net profit margins on a per product basis. And that's actually a lot harder than it sounds on the surface, because you'll have to attribute the first variable costs of each product accordingly. So that's your cost of goods sold. And then more difficulty, it's attributing the OPEX side. So that means, firstly, people's time, engineering time, commercial time, marketing spend, and other expenses down to the level on a per product basis. And I think it's worth taking the time to do this exercise. And if you look at how this ratio changes over time, if you see an upward increase in that, that's a good sign that, that you're trending towards getting product.
And so it sounds as though product market fit is exactly what it says it is. So you're preparing a product or creating a product that fits the market that you're targeting.
Absolutely. Well said.
Excellent. That's really helpful. Thank you. And with all the time that we have left, maybe you can quickly touch on some operational improvements that may help our listeners.
Sure. I think right now trying to streamline some of your processes is a good idea. And in doing so, it's really good to sort of figure out a handful of relevant KPIs that quickly assess and summarize the health and momentum of your business. And I do try to limit that to five, because too many becomes not really useful.
Yeah.
And to put these KPIs on a dashboard so that every morning when you wake up, you take a quick look and say, how are we doing? Check mark good, check mark bad, how does it look? And I'd also suggest using this time towards productization of your technology. And in partly doing that, it's clearing your technical debt. And doing so really helps to improve the stability and robustness of your code base, so that when the full unlock happens, you again are ready to do customer delivery.
And so it sounds like we've got a bit of a theme here, which is you need to be catching up with all the things that you didn't have time for before, all of the things that fell through before.
That's exactly right, I think, but that's exactly what people should be doing with their time.
Well, Carol, it's been great to chat, and this has been a really useful discussion, and hopefully our listeners now have a checklist of practical things to think about in this time whilst the UK prepares to unlock.
Thank you very much for today, Roisin.
Thank you for listening to Access to Answers, Preparing to Unlock. We hope that you found this episode informative, but if you have any questions, please don't hesitate to get in touch using the information provided.